It's not a dream job, this is reality. I am an actor.
The best word I can say that will describe this was boom.
And I think that you are an ostrich. Well, your head must be in the sand.
The Premier League is a fraud.
Ferret head. Very much looks like a ferret, doesn't it?
Which phone is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
Hello and welcome to the Balls and Lee Football Show, which is our football show here on Balls and Lee. My name is Mikey Trainer, and I'm joined by Gavin Cooney and Mark Farrelly this week. Only one Gavin.
Ayo.
Controversial. Not really.
Should I just be called Gavin or Gavin? I would happily be called Gavin.
Gavin works.
Gavin.
Okay, we're here with Gavin Cooney and Gavin, who the artist formerly known as Mark Farrelly this week. A reminder before we get on and... I was going to say on and popping there, but I stopped myself.
On and boogie.
Can we just rewind and cut that out completely? So before we get started, reminder that you can get in touch with us using hashtag the ball bag if you're on a social media platform that uses hashtags. Otherwise, it's just completely stupid. Alternatively, you can get in touch on Snapchat and Instagram. Before we record this podcast, we put a photo of ourselves out on both of those photo heavy media places, and we ask for questions. Alternatively, if you're, you know, really old school and you've got like AOL or something, you can email the gaffer at balls.ie. We'll see them, we'll read your questions on the show, we'll answer them. A reminder as well that you can, you should comment on sound, if you're watching on SoundCloud or any of those podcasty places.
iTunes.
The technical terms are just rolling off my tongue this week. I'm on fire.
There's one very important platform that we always forget. It's Stitcher.
Stitcher's big out there.
Stitcher's where it's at.
Comment, rate, subscribe, review, all those good things. Interact. This week we've got a very fun show lined up. We've got Ronan Kavanagh, who is an Irishman working as a sports scientist with Burnley in the Premier League. Mm-hmm. Great Irish connection at Burnley at the moment, but he is also going behind enemy lines.
He's
with
plotting
Wales.
Our demise.
He is he's a statistician and a fitness guru with Wales, so we'll be quizzing him on.
He might know something about Gareth Bale.
Need to get out of him. We need to find out if Bale is going to make it or not, and he better not. We need to like be threatening and stuff about that as well. We've also got Pundit Watch as usual. We've got a very entertaining Pundit Watch this week, and our Ladbrokes Bet of the Week. And as always, we'll answer your questions to the ball bag at the end of the show. But first up, we're going to talk about the main talking point in football this week, unfortunately. It's the expansion of the World Cup to 48 teams.
You think it's a bad thing?
Well, no. I think it's unfortunate that this is the main story of the week, is what
very
I'm saying.
Good.
So give me a one-word reaction to the news that the World Cup is 48 teams.
Yeah.
It was more of a noise, but onomatopoeia will accept it. Mark, are you going to give us one word?
Hashtag Team 49. Let's do this.
Okay, yeah, I suppose that is technically one word.
A catchy title for a podcast.
My reaction would have been, okay.
It was going to come anyway. I mean, Sepp Blatter had planned to make it a 40-team expansion, and now Gianni Infantino, a man who's done so many incredibly boring and lengthy
He just wants another one.
He just wants another draw. The greatest and longest draw of all time.
Yeah, like, this is what I can't accept about the World Cup. I don't mind really that there's 48 teams in it, but the idea of a Group P...
Yeah,
just frustrates me.
Group P.
So it's 16 groups of three teams, and to avoid...
16 groups I'm down with, just until they start being called, like, LMNOP.
Well, you think they should be Group Aragon. And
Group AA or something, I don't know. I just can't go. Meanwhile, in Group M...
Group Eucalyptus.
And to avoid, cheating and collusion, and to avoid teams playing for draws, it's going to be impossible to play for draws, because drawing games will end in penalty shootouts.
Yeah, I like that, because I definitely, you don't want, I would say crap teams, but it's always the big teams that play crap at major tournaments. You don't want those stalemates. I thought you made a good point in your post about it that we had on site yesterday, the winners and losers, that, I've forgotten what your good point was.
Oh no,
it must have been so poor.
I can go through all the X and the points that I made.
No, there was one in particular, let me get it now.
Was it regarding England? Because England are screwed. Poor England are going to draw three games and lose all of them on penalties.
I remembered it now. It's the fact that
two games or
I'm someone who likes to watch every game of a tournament. And that's going to be really tough now. Really tough. Not only because there's 48 teams.
Yeah. I think it's 80 matches.
That's an outrageous amount of matches to play in that space of time. But also, a lot of those matches are going to be dog shit.
Yeah. Someone on Twitter made a great point yesterday. They said they could play a 48-team World Cup in 32 days, but it takes 63 days to play the Connacht Championship, which is seven teams.
Yeah.
So, well, they need to expand, what do you think of it, Mikey?
Expand the Connacht Championship to 48 teams.
What do you think of it?
A 48-team World Cup. I mean, I don't like. I'm definitely not upset by it. I mean, it means Ireland are pretty much going to the World Cup. Same.
Yeah, we're pretty much bang on. And but like at the moment,
it also it completely changes what going to a World Cup is. It used to be you're there, you're in the groups. That's an achievement in itself. Now it's a 48-team World Cup. There's like a pre-group group, so you have to get out of that, otherwise you're a laughing stock.
Yeah.
Now that's worrying for Ireland if we get a tough draw in there and we don't make it. Then it's like we don't actually make it to the World Cup, because if there's a round of 32 after, that's the real World Cup. That's what everyone's going to be like. Okay, yeah, no, this is the actual World Cup. We've made it to the World Cup proper. And while yes, you are going to get some hilarious moments where big teams aren't going to make it out of that group, I'm scared that Ireland.
The only thing when you mention that now that I think of it, a round of 32 sounds great. 16 games where there's so much on the line.
Yeah.
Like that does sound much more appealing than
yes.
the sort of drab last. If you think of that being the last group games when there was four teams in a group, it's much more appealing to have that sort of round of 32. Every game there's something on the line.
It's going to be way tougher for the players as well. You've got to come through the mental, like, I don't know, I don't want to say high or like the low of trying to get through that first group, and then, oh, you're in another group now, and then you have to get out of that, and then you're playing the winner or the runner-up of another group. It's a lot of games.
Yeah, someone on Twitter, a guy called Hugh Davis, like did a draw for the World Cup based on the current world rankings. Good news is that we've made it.
Yes.
Northern Ireland actually didn't, because they're slightly below us apparently in the UEFA rankings, but we've made it, and the group that we're in is Brazil and Mexico. It's genuinely the most difficult group to start.
Right. So, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, so say we qualify to go to the 48-team World Cup and everyone's like, hey, ole, ole, ole. There's a feckin' Nicky Burns doing a single. You know, we're out here having a great time. And then we get dropped in a group of Brazil and Mexico and we go home before actually making the final 32. It's like, shit.
But we are definitely going to make it. And, I mean, I saw a couple of people make the point that...
Well, we're going to make 2018, which is a 32-team World Cup. So we better be making 48-team
World Cup. Yeah, because there'll be even... if Russia, you know, keep expanding as they are, there'll be far fewer teams in Europe by the time that competition swings around.
Yeah. The help of God.
Bloody hell!
Sorry.
What a broadside against Eastern Europe that was.
Just sort of purely footballing sense. Just never again will we have a Macedonia.
Just don't use the word cleanse, is what I would say in your grant.
What a victory this is, by the way, for John Delaney. He called it. He was laughed at, mocked and derided when he suggested that extra teams should go to the World Cup.
Loads of them.
Yeah.
Now there's loads of them going.
So we decided to, well, we'd come up with a few ideas. You know, expanding the World Cup to 48 teams is a pretty absurd idea, really, anyway. So we asked for your other kind of crazy ideas to improve the World Cup, and we asked around the office as well. Our own Donny Mahoney came back with the fact that FIFA should have their own team every year, like just the bureaucrats out there.
Yeah.
You could maybe pick Luis Figo, you can't pick Michel Platini
anymore.
Is it
like friends of FIFA, like Christian Carambo, who's always there doing
immediately popped into my head, doing Peter draws. Schmeichel.
And Peter Schmeichel, they love.
Lucas Radebe.
You could have that. Radebe. You could have that like beige man who does all the draws. I think he's Portuguese as well.
Oh, Pedro Pinto.
Yeah. Why not?
sure. It's just words to get us through to the next sentence. I've feeling the FIFA team might do well. I mean, can't rule out the fact that they might have the referees on side. Yeah. You never know.
Well, inevitably.
A guy called Patrick High got in touch on Twitter to say by the time 2028 turns around, it'll be corporations competing instead of countries. An Apple versus Nike final could be worth millions.
Yeah.
Now, this is an interesting idea. And then we clicked on Patrick's Twitter profile, and he describes himself as husband, father, and diplomat.
Oh,
he works in the British Embassy in Tel Aviv.
Oh, there you go. Interesting. Get him on for an interview. See how Awat is doing over in Israel.
I was thinking a next goal wins type situation.
Yeah,
or last goal wins. I suppose. Yeah. So you play away. Like I was thinking, it was just you play your 90-minute match, and whoever scored the last goal is actually the winner. Would make it much more fun, but because you took it a step further. You're like, you don't know how long the match is going to actually last. It's genuinely just like, you know, Mam's here, you have to come in for your tea. So just randomly someone's going to come down. Maybe Eric Cantona, I'm thinking like the Nike ad.
Yeah,
that's in my
head
now.
It's a really good
he's there with a cane, he just goes, next goal wins!
Yeah.
And then
like it starts off like a warm-up, both teams just having a kick about, like maybe two balls on the pitch, they're just like warming up, and then Eric Cantona comes down and drops like a silver ball from like an elevated platform.
Okay.
And then its next goal wins. So the match could be 40 seconds long if you latch onto it and you end it. Or you could be there for 2 hours and 45 minutes trying to break down a stern Albanian defence. You know, there's that. But that was just something I discussed with Mark. My actual thinking, I wanted to look at other sports where they don't like draws, because this is a big problem, is if we, these groups of three, everybody's terrified to lose, we'll get crap football.
Mm.
So ice hockey is actually a really good sport for, you know, okay, it's over now, overtime, but both teams lose a player. So it gets a bit more chaotic and frantic. There's a bit more space on the pitch. And then I think overtime two, it happens again. They drop another player and then they go to a shootout. Say the 90 minutes are up and it's a 0-0 draw. You have 30 minutes of additional time. First 50 minutes are 7-a-side on a full 11-a-side pitch.
Is that a punishment for finishing 0-0?
Yeah.
Okay, so finishes 1-1. You start off with what, 10
actually,
players?
No, it's draws.
Okay, it's draws. Okay.
Yeah, forget you for draws. So you drop to 7, first 15 minutes. If it's still a draw at the end of those 15 minutes, you drop to 5-a-side on a full 11-a-side pitch. Definitely get a winner then. Yeah. Definitely going to be no draws then. So that's my harebrained idea.
That's much.
And then if it's still a draw after 5-a-side, then you just go full ice hockey and do ice hockey penalties, running from the halfway line like Robbie Keane did when he moved to Inter Milan.
Did that, with MLS, didn't they?
They used to do that back in the day in MLS. It was just the most American thing you could
I also
the problem. Yeah, the PKs. This is the Americans just win at World Cup PKs because they've been doing them since they were in kindergarten.
I do like the idea of making the goals progressively bigger as extra time ticks on. Mm-hmm. I don't know how feasible that is. My more boring idea was to just get rid of qualifying it altogether and just bring everybody in, have a couple of preliminary rounds of, I don't know, Brazil against Djibouti, and just have it for the sake of not having
Djibouti are a name I've seen 100% more of in my timeline this week. Djibouti is the one country that everybody turns to. Djibouti aren't going to qualify for a 48-team World Cup.
That ruins my other World Cup plan, is to make sure that Eamon Dunphy has to research Djibouti for RT.
I mean, like, everyone's
still does he play for Djibouti?
Everybody's going on about how these teams, how expanding to 48 teams is going to have crap teams in it, and I'm like, well, no, Holland didn't make the Euros there.
I don't know.
That's because they're a crap team.
If you're trying to make like a 32 international team,
I'm telling you, you can find 48. FIFA,
it's always a struggle.
Yeah, that's because
like,
they don't have half the teams in FIFA. Like, they don't have, well, they didn't have Wales until like last year.
True.
Because there's 50 nations. I think there's 48 decent teams out there. It's just all about how you structure.
How in the name of God would you host it if you had every country in the world in the World Cup?
Yeah, this is, yeah.
If we got that, we'd be screwed. You'd have to play games in like Terry Kyle Park in Cavan or somewhere, all these club GAA grounds.
It's Japan versus Belgium at the Carlisle Grounds. The attendance is 1,000, but there's about 200 people up in Bray Bowl watching across the road there.
It means that the next World Cup will almost certainly be in the United States. I think that's kind of what's expected.
But we need another American World Cup.
I think so, I'd
certainly be well up for it. I'm definitely, like, where are we going to Qatar before we're going back to America?
There are reasons there. We did ask, by the way, ask our good followers on Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat and everywhere and Twitter for their ideas. We did get a few. Miles Courtney, raffle it, €5 per ticket, book of three for €12.
Sounds tried and tested.
Andrew O'Connor, always keep a place for England, regardless if they qualify or not. It's always a good laugh.
Again, true.
I'd second that. Yeah,
I'd have them in. Like the thought of England going out in the round of 48 stage. I mean, if that's not enticing enough to get
round
on board,
of 48. Like, oh, it's even just sounds
so
ridiculous.
Funny, and then the fallout, the complete dressing down, and then the gradual building up of their young players, like they do every single time.
We'll be getting ready for Timbuktu.
Brilliant to see.
Stephen Doyle wants to invite other planets. Noel Langford actually is a genuinely interesting theory or proposition. Get rid of groups and seeds once qualified. Knockout rounds from start to finish, wide open. Then,
what if you put it into one group of 48 teams, and you play three games each, and the draw is made after every game. So first game we get drawn against Brazil. Then we play the next game after the first round
of games.
And
it's Brazil again.
It's drawn again. It could be Brazil again, but maybe we never can't play them again. It's like, that'd make it lots
that
of
would
fun.
Be interesting. Like, imagine we got France three times in a row.
Or like we could draw Burkina Faso, I don't know who else, Mauritius and
Djibouti.
The Falklands. Or then we could draw Brazil, Mexico and France.
At what point do we get Brazil, to the Germany, stage? Do you remember on the old football games, the old Pro Evos, you used to always be able to do international league and like you'd have a league system with countries. And I used to always wonder, like, in what world could that actually work as a thing? You'd have to just cancel club football for a season and then just go, right, we're going to split into two divisions of 24 based on, I don't know, rankings or whatever. I'd just be like, right, go. Determine who is the best over a however many game season, 48 game season.
Where do we finish?
The best?
I think we'd be
in the promotion spots of Division 2.
Really? Maybe, yeah. I reckon we'd be mid-table.
We'd be the West Brom of of this international league. Just inexplicably getting goals from set pieces and holding teams to draws.
Well, that should be Gareth. That'd be Northern Ireland with Gareth McCauley.
Yeah, that's true. They do.
If we had a continental breakdown? So like it's like that Ireland. Maybe soccer needs to take an Ireland football championship route. Adopted Ireland I've football championship format. So you go into the Euros, you try and win Euro 2019 and is World Cup 2020? Yes.
2028,
Euro 2019. If you don't win it, you go into the back door and you play against other losers from other continents. And if you win it, you get the terrible punishment of having to go into the same stage. It's just the quarterfinals of the World Cup.
Wow. It's hard for me to imagine, it's not hard for me to imagine because I saw it with my own eyes, but the Euros used to be only 16 teams. That seems ridiculous now. 16 teams are being added on top of World Cup. So we're essentially squishing a Euros into a World Cup.
Yeah.
It's mad.
It is. But the first of the World Cups were only like 8 teams, I think.
Yeah.
So, I mean, as time goes by,
there was very little crack to be had in those days. There weren't fans on the streets cleaning up for the boys in green back in the Uruguay World Cup.
I'm excited now, though. What time is it?
It's
25 past 4 on the 11th of January 2017. I don't know. When is it kicking in? What World Cup is it kicking in?
June 2028.
All right, grand. So in 11 years' time, we'll be back for a special podcast.
Where are we finishing in that World Cup, by the way? We're going.
We're definitely making the round of 32, but then it's just like every World Cup. It's if we get to the last 16, we've done it. We open top bus and then go back to Dublin.
I reckon we're losing to the new Soviet Union in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, they will have
a
strong team.
That's what we wanted you to think.
They will have a strong team. What I really want to know is when am I going to be able to download a Football Manager save that I can sim ahead and simulate this tournament and see how the Reese Grego Coxes of this world do for Ireland. There's an under 17 name dropping.
Okay.
Who's the other one? There's another really highly rated young player on FIFA. What's his name? From West Brom, Zach Elbuzetti. See how those lads have led us to glory. Watch out for the Football Manager simulation. Hopefully we can get that up on site sometime soon. That's all the World Cup discussion. That's more than enough World Cup discussion for one podcast. So we'll leave it there. We're going to say goodbye to Mark Faraday. Thank you for joining us for that whimsical discussion. We are now going to throw to an interview we did earlier. A very interesting man by the name of Ronan Kavanagh, who is a sports scientist with Burnley and the Welsh national team. And we quizzed him about basically how he ended up there from studying sports science at University of Limerick to ending up being best mates with Gareth Bale. So here's that. Sports scientist who works with Burnley and the Welsh national team, having studied sports science at UL. Now, when you meet up with old friends or you meet new people and they ask you what your job is, that is something that comes across as very cool. I'm just going to say that straight away. It's a very cool job to have, at least for someone like us who's absolutely obsessed with sport. So the first question, and I apologise if it's a bit blunt, is how do you go from sports science UL to working with a Premier League club? What's the sort of path that you've trodden there?
I started off working with a company in Dundalk called Stat Sports. Now, they look after basically the GPS, they supply GPS devices to, I'd say, I don't know, last count, probably 16, between 16 and 20 of the teams in the Prem. They go all through the Championship, they supply a lot of rugby teams, and they're after breaking into the NFL and the college game in America as well. So, like, I started there in 2011, I think it was. And kind of, you start there, and I mean, the company only started, I think, in 2007, 2008. So when I went in, it was still kind of in its infancy, like. So they were obviously trying to get new clients on board and everything when I was just starting up. So before you knew it, like, my first week working with them, I was I was up like helping out Ulster Rugby analyse their sessions, and then a couple of weeks after that, Leinster. So me and my mate from UL started there at the same time, and we were kind of going around mostly Ireland for probably the first 12 months. And then after that, then I started doing demos over in England, where you basically try and sell the product more or less. So my first one was QPR. I went over and did QPR. And from there, then you just get more and more gigs, kind of. They start just dropping you into different clubs and that.
Okay.
So from that, you make loads of contacts and stuff, and you meet all these fitness coaches and all the rest of it, and you think, yeah, this is something I'd probably not prefer to be doing, but like StatSports was a great networking tool, like, and I kind of never understood why it didn't get probably as much press as it should have at the time, because it was such a big company,
yeah,
based out of Dundalk IT, like. So yeah, from there then I was dipping in and out, and then the international stuff came up, where basically international teams are kind of saying, yeah, we want to do GPS, but we've got a fitness coach or whatever, he doesn't know how to use it, so can you supply a member of staff? So they did that. So I went out, I first started going out with England under 20s rugby. So I was going there, and you basically spend a week with them on camp, basically as a member of their staff. And that was brilliant. Like, got to go to the Junior World Cup in France, which they won. And,
yeah,
you know, it's an unbelievable experience. And again, you get to meet loads of different people, and people are coming in and out from different clubs. And it's a real good experience. And then I think after the first Six Nations, Wales came on board and said, it was when they played Scotland away in the last World Cup qualifying campaign, I think, was my first camp. And they, StatSport sent me over. And so I was kind of working under Ryland Morgans, who at the time was head fitness coach at Liverpool, and Adam Owen, who at the time was head fitness coach at Rangers. So again, really good people to learn off, like. So.
Yeah.
I went in there, and then, yeah, they said, right, look, you can come with us for the rest of the campaign, and that turned into the next campaign, and that turned into the next campaign, and the Euros and everything like that.
Great. Ronan, I'm going to dive in with what is probably a very ignorant question, so forgive me, but what are your duties like as a sports scientist day to day? I think most of us have a general idea of what sports science is, but could you maybe give us an insight as to what you, when you're in a camp, as it were, with the Welsh national team, like, what are you doing day to day? Who are you reporting to, and what's your involvement on match days?
Yeah, well, so like I said, Ryland and Adam are my kind of two overseers, really. And it's the day starts basically where you're up, the lads do their wellness questionnaires in the morning. So say if we're camp starts on a Monday, the boys will arrive in Sunday night, and then Monday morning they'll fill out a questionnaire, they'll do probably some saliva tests and stuff like that, and it gives us a gauge of where they're at from their club.
What kind of questions are on these wellness questionnaires?
It's like five questions: lower body soreness, quality of sleep, how ready are you to train. So it's just that, and that gives us a little gauge of where they are in terms of like lower body soreness and that. But clubs prior to the camp will send us a lot of information on the boys, then you kind of know what they're used to on a weekly basis. So 2 days before a game, this player does this, this player does this, this player will actually train 2 days before a game. So you have to kind of plan it from that respect and kind of get that information across to the coaches. So from there, then, you know, the boys just, we're obviously based in the hotel and stuff like that. We'll train at 11, so 10:30, the boys will come down to the gym. They'll do some pre-activation exercises and that, just to get them ready for training and get everything switched on. from there, then we go out on the pitch. The lads will have all their GPS pods on, like, and I'll keep an eye on that live while still looking after the drinks and the nutrition and all that, just to make sure everything's ready. And based on the targets we've got from the clubs, we will, adapt the sessions or whatever. And then, obviously, players will need a certain stimulus on a certain day, or the team will need a stimulus on a certain day, and the live stuff just basically confirms to us that, yeah, they've got enough, or, they're in their kind of sweet spot or target zone for the day.
These GPS things, now, this is something that every sports fan will be familiar with from seeing them, like whether you're watching Sky Sports News and you see a group training. I think the Irish rugby team have them on the back during matches, and everybody will see them and they'll go, what are those things? So could you give us an idea as to exactly like what sort of thing stats they're feeding to you live that you are kind of, making your judgments based on?
Yeah, so like they're 10 hertz GPS units. So they're basically they collect your position 10 times a second. So from that, then you get total distance, and then beyond that. So like total distance is like what we'd use as a volume marker or whatever, and it tends to be the first one everyone goes to, it's the first metric everyone looks at. But, when you actually break that down and what is what's the total distance made of, and that's where speed zones came into it. So there's like 6 speed zones. So we tend to look at zones 5 and 6, which is when you're traveling above 5.5 meters per second, and zone 6 then is above 7 meters per second. So obviously that's much more demanding on the body than just plodding around at 4 meters per second or whatever the case may be. So you kind of break it into then how much high-speed running the player has done during their session to give a more accurate perception of workload. And then it goes into more, and they say, right, well, high-speed running is all well and good. What about the short and sharp stuff where players don't have space to get up to high speeds, but they're still working equally as hard? So there's another metric then called explosive distance or high metabolic load distance, which cover that area of it. So you kind of have your what we call intensive stuff, which is your smaller spaces, and then your extensive stuff, which is bigger spaces where lads actually get the opportunity to get up to higher speeds. And that's basically how we kind of work our training and stuff like that, because you need both in order to compete on a Saturday or whatever. You need to be equally good at both.
Yeah, and Ronan, are Gareth Bale's stats, are they off the chart?
It depends. Like, so, well, in terms of what he's good at, like the high speed stuff, like his max speed would be bigger than a lot of people's. Yeah,
yeah. And what's he like to work with? We're obviously fascinated by him.
What's that? Sorry.
What's he like to work with, Ronan?
Oh, brilliant, brilliant. Yeah. Yeah, they're all really good. Like, just get on with it. I mean, the Welsh boys have all been playing together since they were 21. Like, so it's almost like a club setup we have there, because it's the same squad all the time, and it's the same group of people that have been playing together since they were small. Like,
yeah, and the experience during the Euros, that you obviously went to France with them. That must have been amazing, was it?
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. Like, and I mean, the setup we had there in terms of we were obviously based in Pinard in the north of France, and we had a performance gym set up, and the pitches were brilliant. The preparation was outstanding. Like, and I think we were delighted we got so far in the end, particularly from a sports science department and a staff, because everyone did make the effort to do Everton properly. You know, no one caught any corners, and we never thought, oh, we'll leave it off or whatever.
Yeah,
your victory run.
You know, yeah, exactly. And everyone just kind of
you take real pride in that, in seeing from the fitness aspect a team being asked to play a lot of games in a short space of time and doing so extremely well. That must have been a very good feeling.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And like, I mean, no injuries really throughout the whole thing either, was kind of a good selling point for us. Like,
yeah.
Like obviously we tried to keep on top of Everton, so the training, the recovery, the supplementation, we, you know, we worked hard on that throughout them, and we kind of felt later on that it'd show, you know.
But now what I'd like to know as well is, you're having so much success with the Welsh team. Are you also sneaking off to watch the Ireland games by yourself, or what's the story there during the Euros?
Well, during the Euros, my brother obviously travelled over, so I was trying to beg, borrow and steal tickets off people.
Join the club.
I think my brother had... the Welsh FA had two tickets for me, but they were in Bordeaux, and I think my brother was in Toulouse, and he couldn't get to them in time. We all actually watched Ireland Sweden in the canteen, like when we were having dinner, and the boys just started laughing when I jumped when Hoolahan scored. Like, but it was a good laugh. Like,
and Ronan, how does it feel to be plotting Ireland's downfall from inside the Welsh camp?
Yeah, I'm getting a lot of heat from that. The Welsh boys are saying I'm a spy. And then the
accusations,
the Irish boys of Burnley are just saying I'm a snake.
Oh, Jeff Hendrick and Stephen Ward are having a go with you, I think.
Yeah.
We had Stephen on this podcast. He seems like a great guy. It must be good to work with him on a daily basis.
Yeah, brilliant. They all are, to be fair. They work so hard in that, in training. And again, it's just that thing of like, just working hard and doing Everton properly, because just do Everton properly, and it sounds stupid, like, but the results will take care of themselves then if you be the best you can be, kind of thing.
And Ronan, you don't fancy giving us an inside track as to whether Gareth Bale will be fit for the game in Dublin in March?
No, I don't.
No,
that's quite all right.
Well, you might indulge us in this one then. You've worked with a lot of rugby players. You've worked with a lot of football players. It's a very general, sweeping question. But from the two sports, do you say, like, you've got a winger in football and a winger in rugby, because it would be unfair to compare props to anybody on a football pitch, really. But say you've got a winger in football and a winger in rugby. Who's got the better numbers? Who's got the more impressive stats? Or does it not really work like that?
It doesn't. Like, so... I personally think footballers get a bad rap and that for being soft, but like they're playing twice a week and they've got little niggles, and like it's so hard, like their feet are in bits after games, they're sore, they're getting battered, they're getting chucked up in the air by centre halves and stuff, and like it's just that, you know, people say, oh, they're soft then when they go down holding their ankle or something, even though he's after playing 30 games all year. And then, you know, the rugby boys, it's basically the rugby boys, they might have a higher top speed, but the rugby boys can't go as long as the football boys.
Interesting.
And I mean, obviously, it varies position to position, like, but and player to player, individual to individual. Sure. But you tend to see higher total distance figures and probably higher high speed running figures, but probably a greater number of sprints probably per minute from your rugby boys. And then the rugby boys have impacts and collisions and stuff as well that obviously the footballers wouldn't be able to cope with.
Interesting. Well, thanks very much for your time. We'll leave it there. But before we let you go, I'm going to put you on the spot here. I'm going to ask you to make a prediction for this match coming up in March. As someone who's seen a bit, you don't have to go into detail. You don't have to tell us that, you know, Joe Allen from the 75th minute on isn't going to be there mentally and physically. But could you give us a score prediction, even just as a fan? How do you think it's going to go?
I don't know. I think that's putting me in a compromising position.
Say a draw, Ronan.
Obviously, I'd like, you know, both teams to qualify and Wales to win the group. So however that happens, I don't mind.
Wow, nice, fair enough. Brilliant. Thanks a million for that, Ronan. Great chatting to you.
All right, no problems. See you, lads.
Cheers. So thanks very much to Ronan for coming on. This is something we want to do more of in this podcast, is just get people who've got really cool jobs around football and get them on to talk about it.
Because we don't count, obviously.
Well, no, clearly. but where people know what we do, we come on here and talk shy about football. But it's always, I've always wanted to know, I've always known what those GPS things were, but I didn't know exactly what they were doing. So that is good to know there. Now it is time to look ahead to the weekend. There's a relatively small game happening on Sunday. Here's the Ladbrokes Bet of the Week.
At Ladbrokes, if one team lets you down on your ACCA of five teams or more, you'll get your money back as a free bet up to €25. Ladbrokes, online, mobile and in-shop. 18 plus, terms and conditions apply. Dunlewy.net.
So as you should be aware, I am a Manchester United fan. Gavin is a Liverpool fan, which means it was very important who got to decide what the bet was this week. And that responsibility has fallen to me.
Yeah, mainly because I got the bet badly wrong last week. Yeah. I backed, what did I say, Eden Hazard to score and Chelsea to beat Spurs?
Yes.
And then not only did Eden Hazard not score, Chelsea did not beat Spurs.
Well, I was watching that game. Eden Hazard should have scored. He was through with a very good chance early on. And if he buries that, it's a completely different ball game. Mm. But ifs and buts, all that jazz. Liverpool versus Manchester United. Manchester United versus Liverpool, I should say. It's being held at Old Trafford.
4 o'clock Sunday.
Gigantic game.
It is big.
Because Man United win it, they're within, what? How many points at Liverpool? Two?
I'll bring up the table. Get into the bet first.
Okay. So I was going to pick this, and I'm thinking to myself, what is going to happen? And I think Man United are going to win. I'm going with Didi Hamann. I'm agreeing with Didi Hamann here. How did that make you feel, by the way, before we get into the bet? Didi Hamann went on Sky Sports and basically said, Sadio Mane is not there. Man United nullified Liverpool at Anfield, and Man United are smashing everyone now. So I think United are
going to me wants to commend Didi for lulling Manchester United into full sense of
that
security.
That was definitely the alternative.
And, but the other incredibly nervous, neurotic part of me thinks, oh my God, he's so right. We're going to miss Mane. It's going to be awful.
Yeah, but here's the thing. The one thing I don't agree with is United's nullification of Liverpool at Anfield having any bearing on this match, because at that time, Man United were a hot mess and our tactical plan for that game was, okay, let's not lose this game because we're extremely ropey in several areas of the pitch. We're not creating chances. We're conceding goals. Lockdown. And we locked down and we managed to keep a clean sheet, but that's not how we play anymore. Yeah, it's almost like a different season.
That's what I was going to ask. Can Mourinho can't really hunker down and play for a point at Old Trafford because he was saying last night the fans need to be better. So that obviously means that he wants them, you know, if the fans are going to be loud and as they can be at Old Trafford,
before
they
we
need
get
to
into
have
the
something
Ladbrokes
to respond.
Bet of the week, actually, this is an interesting topic because I've seen a lot of this. There's become Pep Guardiola had a bit of a go at the City fans a couple of weeks ago. He was like, what are you doing? Like, come on.
Yeah, leaving games early and something
like
that.
A load of United and Liverpool fans had a go at that. And then last night, Mourinho says the same thing and all the City fans are jumping on that. And I saw some City fans put a screenshot of United with an empty terrace and being like, imagine if Man City did that, the reaction. It was the Hull allocation. So Hull didn't sell their tickets. But this whole idea of like slagging fans for not being good, all of the big teams' home atmosphere is by and large crap. There's so many tourists, and it's not from Man United. Arsenal goes through it as well. The level of expectancy at Anfield, like I get nervous watching matches at Anfield when it's 0-0 and you can literally feel every touch being analysed, and it's just like Jesus Christ. But it's like that at every stadium. It's such a weird thing. But that kind of goes out the window for the big games. I don't know whether it's more difficult for the more casual fans to get tickets or whether everybody is just switched on from the first minute. I have to, if a throw-in gets given against Manchester United, that's an insult to my family.
Okay.
That's how that how it has to be. So I think we can expect a very, very feisty game on Sunday.
And you're calling United win?
I'm calling United win. Let's get on to the bet. There were two that came into my thinking, and the first one was that both teams to score and Manchester United to win at 3-1, because, you know, I think that's ultimately not what I've gone for, because ultimately I see this one playing a bit more like the Spurs game, in where it's close, there's tense moments, but one goal might ultimately decide it. And with that in mind, I'm going with Henrik Mkhitaryan first goal scorer at 6-1.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. You see, that allows room for Liverpool to come from behind and win the game. It also, you know, Man United could win 3-0, Man United could win 1-0. But I think Mkhitaryan, like, I've been watching him the last couple of months, and he just finds himself in so many goal-scoring positions. Sometimes his radar can be off. Last night against Hull, he had a few over the bar, ended up setting up the goal. But he, in the first half, he had three golden chances, and on another day, he takes them. I just think he's a player that finds himself in scoring positions a hell of a lot. So for him to be 6-1 to be the first goal scorer in that game, I like the look of it. And yeah, that is our Ladbrokes bet of the week.
Absolutely. And from Liverpool point of view, I'm not sure Jordan Henderson should be fit. He'd be an enormous miss if he's not. Yeah. Emre Can was extremely bad against Sunderland. That position in that 2-2 draw in the league that briefly sent me into a pit of despair before. you can look at that back on Facebook. Please don't. Before Spurs kind of rescued everything against Chelsea. No, Sadio Mane is an enormous miss. John Matip might miss. Ranier Klavan's been quite good the last couple of weeks, but I really am not very comfortable watching him at all.
And there's a lot of, I don't know. It depends. If he's on, you'd be more confident of him in a kind of physical shoving match with Zlatan Ibrahimovic than you would, say, marking a Mkhitaryan or a Martial out wide.
Yes, absolutely. And to be fair, Klavan is very good against Manchester City. And the big thing is that Phil Coutinho should be back. We're expecting him to maybe play a few minutes against Southampton in the Cup tonight and be ready to start the weekend. Daniel Sturridge might start either. So from my point of view, I'm incredibly nervous. Liverpool are currently 5 points clear of Manchester United. I mean, if Liverpool lose that game, it's only 2 points.
Yeah. If Liverpool lose that game...
It's what, 10th win in a row or something?
If Liverpool lose that game, you've either got to consider Manchester United as legitimate title contenders or give the title to Chelsea. Yeah. One of the two. Now, I gave the title to Chelsea on Squeaky Ball's time before they lost to Spurs. I still think Chelsea are going to win the league. I still fancy it. But I think the race for second place is wide open, and I think that any of the teams between second and sixth could fail to qualify for the Champions League at this stage, which is absolutely madness. If you take Chelsea, if you just erase Chelsea from the Premier League, you've got the most fascinating title race in a long time. But hopefully Chelsea lose more and it just becomes the most fascinating title race in a long time. Yeah. No offense to Chelsea fans who are probably listening to this thinking, going, well, this is shite. You can take solace in the fact that team are probably going to win the league.
Probably. We should mention at this point that, Mikey, if you put a 5-team or more accumulator down on the Ladbrokes website this weekend, and if one team lets you down, they'll refund your money of a free bet of up to £25.
So if you're going to bet on, if you're going to put a United or Liverpool in that, their chances are, you know, they're the team you want to be. you're one.
Yeah, I'm just worried if you're backing Liverpool to win, they're going to let you down. I'm nervous. But
if you get the other four right, you're grand.
Your money back.
With Ladbrokes. So that's 6-1 Henrik Mkhitaryan first goal scorer is our Ladbrokes bet of the week. Let's get into Pundit Watch.
Get double the odds on first goal scorer with Ladbrokes. That's right, if your winning first goal scorer scores in the opening 20 minutes of selected live matches, then Ladbrokes will double the odds. Available in Ladbrokes shops nationwide. 18 plus, terms and conditions apply. Dunlewy.net.
Pundit Watch.
Hello, welcome to Fletching Sav, the best bits.
There it is. We've had, what a weekend it's been.
Before we get to what I want to complain about, Mike Phelan has sadly found himself a pundit since we were last, broadcast.
I just think whoever is in charge of those decisions at Sky Sports is just an sadistic, evil man.
So Mike Phelan was sacked by Hull last Tuesday, am I right? And a week later...
Let's get him on live television to talk about the current ownership of Hull before they lose to Manchester United at Old Trafford. What did they think he was going to say? Did they think he was going to go on live TV and go, oh, it's a disgrace, every single
one
of them?
Did he sound off about the clubs?
Oh, my God. He said nothing.
Really?
He said less than nothing. He almost said nothing, and then he stopped short of saying nothing and went backwards and said less than nothing. He was sitting there with Phil Neville, which was no help to him, to be totally honest. He needed someone to bounce questions off him. And Phil Neville is just this wide-eyed kind of, I'm just going to say something and hope that it makes sense, and then if it doesn't, I'll, you know, tweet about it.
One man who doesn't worry about making too much sense, Mr. Paul Merson.
Yeah, but just before we move on from Phelan, they got him on to talk about Hull, and he tried to be as, you know, responsible and as, you know, safe as he could possibly be, and he was. But the one funny thing that happened was I went to get my get something to eat. I was working for the match, so I went to get some food before it kicked off, and I was walking down past the Bachelor Pub. And they clearly someone had left the speakers on, because Mike Phelan's pre-match punditry was blaring out of the speakers just to the people of Dublin. So people were just walking around Dublin with Mike Phelan just going, yeah, well, I think it's going to be tough for them. I think they're going to have to be very solid defensively. And like he was some sort of political hero that we all needed to, you know, worship. I thought that was funny. But then, you know, they probably turned it off. And that was the end of Mike Phelan being relevant.
Ah, oh, poor Mike Phelan. Well, Paul Merson was on Soccer Saturday. He was asked about Phelan's successor, actually, Mr. Marco Silva. We're going to play a bit for you now. It is appalling shite, so four warnings.
Well, let's get you started on Marco Silva then, Merce. Well, he's got a good pedigree, hasn't he? Ex-Sporting Lisbon, ex-Olympiacos. Won the league with Olympiacos.
I could win the league with Olympiacos. I'm not a joke. They've won it 107 times. It's only been going 106 years.
I think 44, you know, they've won
44, yeah. 43 times they won it. Why has he always got to be a foreign manager? I've got nothing against foreign managers, don't get me wrong. You know, when Klopp come in, Pep Guardiola, these are top draw managers. What is this geezer any different to Gary Rowlett?
Yeah, but I mean, another top draw manager, but we've had it with David Wagner, and nobody had heard of David Wagner when he came in at Huddersfield. Yeah, we were all critical.
No, but he's at Huddersfield. That's not Premier League. He's at Huddersfield. That's Championship. Yeah, start off. Go to the Championship, start off if you do well, and then you come into Premier. You know, these ex-footballers, they're doing 4-year, 5-year courses, costing a fortune to do their badges, and none of them get a chance. None of them get a chance to manage at the top level. You know, you've got, you know, the ones who are like Sean Dyche, who's doing a great job at Burnley. They're fighting relegation every year. Will he get, you know, a good job? You know, this is a good job as well. Hull are a good team, a great stadium, some very good players, you know, and
well,
again,
what does he know about Hull?
Exactly. What's he know about the Premier League? What's he know?
It is quite astonishing that they've plumped for somebody like this. I totally agree. It's just baffling when there's a lot of people out there who know about the Premier League, know what's maybe required to dig in. He's not got a clue. He's a manna from heaven to be given this job on his CV.
On the flip side of that, Pochettino was a similarly left field appointment at the time.
Mm-hmm. For 6 months.
And look what he's gone and done.
6 months.
For 6 months.
He won 17 games on the bounce with Olympiacos. I don't care what league.
You need to start caring because. Yeah, that can happen.
17 wins and bounce, fantastic.
That can happen. That can happen at Olympiacos. You ask people, that can happen at Olympiacos. That can happen. They you couldn't tell me who Olympiacos are playing in 2 months' time, because they don't do the fixtures. They do the fixtures a month at a time. That's how bad it is. No.
Yeah, well, there you go.
I did some research, actually.
Okay, yeah.
I was pissed off at Paul Merson. I actually did some work. So Paul Merson, I'm going to just go through a couple of his comments and tell him why he's wrong. I could win the league with Olympiacos. I can't objectively say that this is wrong, but on the probability that Merson's main management job was at Walsall, where he took them from the Championship down, and before he was sacked with them in the relegation zone in League One, means he probably wouldn't win the league with Olympiacos. Mm-hmm. He goes on to say they've won it 107 times, and it's been going 106 years. No, they haven't. They've won the league title.
Well, that's just banner, isn't it?
43 times, and the competition has been staged since 1927, and it's been successfully completed on 80 occasions. So that's a little bit wrong there.
Yep.
He goes on to say, why has it always got to be foreign manager? Marco Silva replaced Mike Phelan, who is a noted Englishman, who succeeded Steve Bruce, who is a noted Englishman.
I thought he was Puerto Rican.
Before Bruce came Nicky Barnby, who, you'd never guess where he's from. He's from England. And before Barnby, Nigel Pearson, he's English. Before Nigel Pearson came Ian Dowie, who, okay, he's not English, but he's British, he's from Northern Ireland. Before Dowie, Phil Brown, English. Phil Brown, Phil Parkinson, English. Before Phil Parkinson, Peter Taylor, English. Before Phil Parkinson, Billy Russell, who's Scottish. So that means Hull's last manager was Jan Molby back in 2002.
So what I found interesting about that was, I don't even think he means with the Hull manager, he means anytime there's a job, Premier League job going, it's given to a foreign manager. But then, you know, why does it always have to be an Englishman? Or why can't it be an Englishman? We have great managers like Sean Dyche and Eddie Howe who manage in the Premier League.
But the most successful English manager in the history of the Premier League is Harry Redknapp.
Yeah.
Maybe Bobby Robson.
Hard to argue. And he got offered the Spurs job when they were challenging for the Champions League, which was considered a top job at the time. So that's ridiculous. But then, do you know what really, really bugged me about this, that entire discussion, is that the one really good point came from Matt Le Tissier, and he was embarrassed to make it. Yeah. He was shy to speak up and go, it was similar, Pochettino.
Of course.
He came in.
Of course.
With no experience. With no... what does he know about Premier League? He's from Argentina. He can't watch. It's not like we've broadcast the Premier League to every single country in the entire world so that everybody from the age of 5 can know everything there is to know about the Premier League. And then Pochettino came in and now he's one of the best managers in the league.
And the league is so much better for his presence. This is the best Spurs team we can see.
Which is the real thing that I think they struggle to accept there, is that England don't have the best football players.
No.
England don't have the best managers.
No.
When the Premier League was predominantly English managers and English players, the clubs were completely irrelevant in Europe.
Yeah.
Because they just weren't good enough. It's the influx of foreign players and managers that have made the Premier League what it is, a worldwide league.
By the way, has Paul Merson a job at Sky Sports?
Yeah.
To be fair to Merce, he really goes to bat for English managers. He names one of them and he gets his name wrong. Gary Rowlett. The highest Google result for Gary Rowlett is a guy who lives in Phoenix, Arizona and describes himself on his LinkedIn as an experienced store and multi-unit retail manager leader.
Give him the job. He would have turned these things around, oh.
Gary Rowlett, the former Birmingham guy.
Rowlett.
The Greek fixture list. What's that? That's literally just a succession of words. To get him on to the next sentence. It makes no sense. That can happen. Olympiacos, you win 17 games in a row. It hasn't. They've won 16 games twice. There was last season under Silva, and then there was back in 2005, 2006. Happened. And by the way, when Merce says, you couldn't tell me who they're playing in 2 months. They're playing Panathinaikos in 2 months, mate. Because there's a list of Greek Super League fixtures on the BBC website scheduled up to April 30th. So Paul Merson has defended an English manager, the entirety of English managers, and he can only name one and can't get his name right.
Yeah.
And his argument is a totally false reading of the Greek fixture list.
Yeah,
it's mad.
What England need is to completely restructure their... and I think this is what they're trying to do with that whole academy at the FA, whatever they call it, base camp or some stupid name. But they need to completely look at how they coach children and learn about the game. There's no English football philosophy other than 4-4 fucking 2, write the names on the back of a smoke packet and play two strikers up front. There isn't any. Other countries have an identity. It's one of the problems Ireland struggle with badly, is that we're making a Hames, but what we're not doing is going on TV and going, it's not fair, Irish managers, blah, blah, blah. It's just hard. It's hard to watch sometimes. And I feel bad for Matt Le Tissier.
Sometimes I like Merson, but that kind of stuff.
And I like Phil Thompson.
I love Phil Thompson.
Phil Thompson's great.
I was kind of disappointed by Tomo there.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll get into the ball bag. We've got a few questions in.
Let's dive in. Let's de-stress. Let's unwind and let's have a look at the ball bag. We have a question on Instagram.
Yes.
A very quick question. So thank you very much to JPMF1989, who commented straight away, wants to know greatest ever football boot. And he says, Adidas black and red Predator with the red blades. So I take it that he means by that the 2002 Predator Mania, which I've done about 27 articles for on this website. But the version with the red studs and the white moldies, which I would agree are the best boots of all time. So unfortunately, there's not going to be a lengthy discussion about boots.
Yeah, no,
I totally agree with
Predator Manias. Are they the ones where the three Adidas stripes went right around underneath the bottom of them?
Yes.
That's the answer.
It is the answer. They are the best ever made. What I will do is I will throw out some good shouts.
Okay.
For the running, you just can't look past the Copa Mundials. These are boots that are still being worn, that were worn in the 1970 World Cup. They're timeless classics. Other than that, I have a major soft spot for, if I had to pick a Nike boot.
Is it the Mercurial Vapors circa?
No.
Okay.
I would go with the Air Zoom Total 92, which is a really difficult boot to describe. So if you're on a computer, Google Air Zoom Total 92.
Did you know anyone who wore them?
David Bellion.
Oh, jeez.
Rose to prominence.
Okay.
In them. They weren't a hugely marketed boot in the way. Also, the other ones that I loved were the Total 90. I think they might have been Total 93. Do you remember that ad, the Olé ad, where they had Brazil and Portugal in a stadium playing football?
Mm-hmm.
The ad that that boot was for, and it had the 90 in a circle on the instep, and it was like red.
That's them, is it?
No. They came later, but I love them too. but yeah, Airstream Total 92 are awesome.
Yeah, but there's no beating
Nothing holds a candle to the Predator Manias.
Brian Higgins back in touch this week. Lads, which of the English football broadcasters would have the best five-a-side team? This presumably partly inspired by last week's discussion on Watch County and the fact that we're always talking about British broadcasters.
We do this for ahead of like tournaments, but we did it for the Euros. I think we might have, we did, yeah.
So it's Sky against BT, I guess.
Okay, BT have, I think, I'm going to go out and say my early favourite, with having done absolutely no research and being presented with this question literally right now, is BT, because they've got all the recently retired pundits. If I'm thinking of a BT team, right, I've got...
David James in nets, is it?
There's got to be a better option. but they could have David James in goal. Then they could have either Richard Dunn or Rio Ferdinand at the back. We'll give it to Ferdinand purely because he's won more in the game. Then you've got a midfield of Paul Scholes, Steve McManaman.
Oh, McManaman.
McManaman be good in a five-a-side arena.
And then Michael Owen up front, is it?
Even Owen Hargreaves, who would surely not be fit to play, but, you know, we could put him into this fictional five-a-side. And then you're talking about Michael Owen up front, they got John Hartson. If you want to go the
Ian Wright route. Is Wright a better option than Owen? Probably not.
Do you give... We see, who does Wright play for? There's dual eligibility for a couple of guys here that are also on BBC. See, Chris Sutton does a lot of punditry for BT on the Scottish side.
Let's just do BT versus Sky. Let's do the satellite broadcasters.
But then, okay, flip side, you've got Carragher and Neville. They don't really pretend.
They have a keeper, though.
They don't like to pretend goalkeepers exist on Sky. But Thierry Henry certainly makes things interesting up front.
Sky are struggling for keeper.
Okay, what about RTE then? You got Sadlier, Haman,
Stephen Hunt, friend of the show, Stephen Hunt. No, you don't have Jonesy anymore.
We can't put Hunty in another five-a-side discussion because he'll be saying that RTE will win it because they'll want it more than BT.
I'm not going to argue with Stephen Hunt for a second a week.
I don't know. Maybe stick Amo in goals. Yeah. We could have talked about Dunphy and Pundit Watch for his swipe at every pundit in England.
Not everyone. He says that Ian Wright is okay.
And Carragher.
Yeah. And he likes Neville and Souness. He's nice things about Souness because he's worked with them and he is probably
He likes his style of viewing the game extremely cynically through a scrunched up face where you don't want to accept that anything is good.
Yeah, exactly. But he had a weird soft spot for Ian Wright. Ian Wright's okay when he puts his mind to it.
Ian Wright's a weird one because one week he could make a really good passionate point. He'd be like, God, yeah, we need more of Ian Wright on TV. He's also really funny and he's one of the few pundits who's not afraid to laugh on live TV.
That's all he does.
In fact, I'd say 70% of his analysis is like belly laughing at a casual pun that like Mark Pugach has made or Gary Lineker on the BBC or something. But then at the same time, on the flip side, Ian Wright can go, he's a wild card.
Okay.
You don't know what he's going to say. The stuff he said about advantage from the West Ham Man City game was other planet punditry. But a lot of the time he is very good. He's fun. He's a bit of fun. Like you do need characters on there as well. You can't have just cardboard cutouts of Owen Hargreaves talking about how, you know, Manchester United used to play.
Robbie Savage, a man, just on Mark Pugach. Robbie Savage.
You can go too far with the characters as well.
Robbie Savage, by the way, appears on every channel and is not making the team in any of them. He calls Mark Pugach Poogers, which is the maddest nickname of all.
That's just classic savagery.
Oh, savagery, I think is the right phrase for it.
Nobody's picking. Nobody's picking
Robbie Savage. So BT win, but do they?
BT.
They have a keeper, you see.
They have a keeper. Sky have your man.
Oh, Matt Murray.
Matt Murray. Sky've got Matt Murray. So he's in goal. Carragher at the back for sure. Redknapp in midfield for sure. And Henri up front. There's four. So you got to throw one more in, I suppose. Neville, you know, they'd be...
Letizia.
At the back. Letizia is an option. Does he do analysis? This is the thing about Merson, Letiz, Thompson, and Charlie Nicholas. Are they pundits? Because they never do live games. It's like Sky have been like, all right, this is your niche. where you're allowed to, you know, get all Brexit and, you know, just kind of waffle on about something that's pissed you off even without really researching it. And that's grand. And that is grand. I mean, like, we're, you know, tearing what Merson said apart. At the end of the day, he said it on Soccer Saturday. It's not like it's halftime in a Champions League game and he's going off about a foreign manager. But they don't yet. They used to do live games, and now they just, they have, it's like they have their little corner and that's all they're needed for. It's odd. So I wouldn't include them in this. I'd say, yeah, you got to edge it with BT. Have we any more questions, or did we just spend like 20 minutes?
Yeah, we spent too long on that one.
Okay.
Sorry, guys.
Thank you very much for listening to the Balls Out Football Show this week from myself and Gavin and from Mark, who's no longer here. I was about to make it sound like he had been killed since recording this podcast, but he's very much alive. Thank you to Ladbrokes, as always, for sponsoring the podcast. Reminder that our Ladbrokes bet of the week is Henrik Mkhitaryan to score first in, what is it, Merseyside versus Manchester.
Christ.
Buy now, Sky Box Office. It's only a matter of time, by the way, before you've got to buy games on Sky Box Office.
I know.
Like boxing, because that's the way they're going. Every week, it becomes more closer to boxing. Soon we're going to have promoters for the teams and belts. But Merseyside versus Manchester. Everton are also playing City, but, you know, nobody really cares about that. Not one of my United fan and Liverpool fan are on the podcast. And, you know, Paul's already are famously anti-Everton as well, apparently. Yeah, Mkhitaryan score for a 6-1 Ladbrokes bet of the week. A reminder as well, if you make a 5-team or more accumulator with Ladbrokes and one of your teams let you down, they'll refund your money as a free bet up to £25. That is awfully sound. Thanks very much for listening. You can download our podcast. You should also comment, rate, and do all the interaction that you can. Because, you know, you get a really good feeling out of doing that. You know, helps your well-being. It's antibodies. It's positive. So do that on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Audioboom. Wherever you can find a podcast, we'll be there. Thank you very much for listening. From Mikey, Gavin, and Mark, we're doing
this
again.
The ghost of Mary.
We'll see you next time.